31. The rain was falling in sheets, threatening to turn the circle within the stones into a sea of mud.
"Hold something over the door," Eddie shouted. "Don't let the rain wash it out."
Roland snatched a glance at Susanna and saw she was still struggling with the demon. Her eyes were half shut, her mouth pulled down in a harsh grimace. He could not see or hear the demon, but he could sense its angry, frightened thrashings. Eddie turned his streaming face toward him.
"Did you hear me?" he shouted. "Get something over the goddamn door and do it now."
Roland yanked one of their hides from his pack and held a corner in each hand. Then he stretched his arms out and leaned over Eddie, creating a makeshift tent. The tip of Eddie's homemade pencil was caked with mud. He wiped it across his arm, leaving a smear the color of bitter chocolate, then wrapped his fist around the stick again and bent over his drawing. It was not exactly the same size as the door on Jake's side of the barrier. The ratio was perhaps 0.75 to 1, but it would be big enough for Jake to come through, if the keys worked.
"If he even has a key, isn't that what you mean?" he asked himself. "Suppose he's dropped it. Or that house made him drop it."
He drew a plate under the circle which represented the doorknob, hesitated, and then squiggled the familiar shape of a keyhole within it. He hesitated. There was one more thing. But what? It was hard to think of, because it felt as if there were a tornado roaring through his head, a tornado with random thoughts flipping around inside it, instead of uprooted barns and privies and chicken houses.
"Come on, sugar," Susanna cried from behind him. "You weakening on me. What's the matter? I thought you was some kind of hot shit stud boy."
Boy.
That was it.
Carefully, he wrote "the boy" across the top panel of the door with the tip of his stick. At the instant he finished the Y, the drawing changed. The circle of rain-darkened earth he had drawn suddenly darkened even more and pushed up from the ground, becoming a dark, gleaming knob. And instead of brown, wet earth within the shape of the keyhole, he could see dim light. Behind him, Susanna shrieked at the demon again, urging it on, but now she sounded as if she were tiring. This had to end, and soon. Eddie bent forward from the waist like a Muslim saluting Allah and put his eye to the keyhole he had drawn. He looked through it into his own world, into that house which he and Henry had gone to see in May of 1977, unaware, except he, Eddie, had not been unaware, no, not totally unaware, even then, that a boy from another part of the city was following them. He saw a hallway. Jake was down on his hands and knees, tugging frantically at a board. Something was coming for him. Eddie could see it, but at the same time he could not. It was as if part of his brain refused to see it, as if seeing would lead to comprehension, and comprehension to madness.
"Hurry up, Jake!" he screamed into the keyhole. "For Christ's sake, move it!"
Above the speaking ring, thunder ripped the sky like cannon fire, and the rain turned to hail. 32. For a moment after the key fell, Jake only stood where he was, staring down at the narrow crack between the boards. Incredibly, he felt sleepy.
"That shouldn't have happened," he thought. "It's one thing too much. I can't go on with this. Not one minute, not one single second longer. I'm going to curl up against that door instead. I'm going to go to sleep right away, all at once. And when it grabs me and pulls me toward its mouth, I'll never wake up."
Then the thing coming out of the wall grunted, and when Jake looked up, his urge to give in vanished in a single stroke of terror. Now it was all the way out of the wall, a giant plaster head with one broken wooden eye and one reaching plaster hand. Chunks of lathing stood out on its skull in random hackles like a child's drawing of hair. It saw Jake and opened its mouth, revealing jagged wooden teeth. It grunted again. Plaster dust drifted out of its yawning mouth like cigar smoke. Jake fell to his knees and peered into the crack. The key was a small, brave shimmer of silvery light down there in the dark, but the crack was far too narrow to admit his fingers. He seized one of the boards and yanked with all his might. The nails which held it groaned, but held. There was a jangling crash. He looked down the hallway and saw the hand, which was bigger than his whole body, seize the fallen chandelier and throw it aside. The rusty chain, which had once held it suspended, rose like a bullwhip and then came down with a heavy crump. A dead lamp on a rusty chain rattled above Jake, dirty glass chattering against ancient brass. The doorkeeper's head, attached only to its single hunched shoulder and reaching arm, slid forward above the floor. Behind it, the remains of the wall collapsed in a cloud of dust. A moment later, the fragments humped up and became the creature's twisted, bony back. The doorkeeper saw Jake looking and seemed to grin. As it did, splinters of wood poked out of its wrinkling cheeks. It dragged itself forward through the dust-hazed ballroom, mouth opening and closing. Its great hand groped amid the ruins, feeling for purchase, and ripped one of the French doors at the end of the hall from its track. Jake screamed breathlessly and began to wrench at the board again. It wouldn't come, but the gunslinger's voice did. "The other one, Jake. Try the other one." He let go of the board he had been yanking at and grabbed the one on the other side of the crack. As he did, another voice spoke. He heard this one not in his head but with his ears and understood it was coming from the other side of the door he had been looking for ever since the day he hadn't been run over in the street.
"Hurry up, Jake! For Christ's sake, hurry up!"
When he yanked this other board, it came free so easily that he almost tumbled over backward.